Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach, always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
Hi there. I am Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, and I am so glad to be with you tonight. Boy, we had some technical problems. Last week, I was so excited to be interviewing a hypnotherapist who works with sex addiction to eliminate the urges and cravings. I do hypnotherapy, so I could not wait to see what was going on. And believe it or not, the show did not go on. There was internet difficulty due to that tropical storm that went all the way up to New York. So I am so sorry. We have rescheduled her for, I think it's the Monday before Thanksgiving. I will keep you posted on that. She is wonderful, and I can't wait. She's got a lot of e-books. She has really devoted her entire life to hypnotherapy, and she truly believes that she's got what it takes to maybe not eliminate all urges and cravings, but definitely to calm down that obsessive-compulsive disorder. And I'm talking about Suzanne Keller Zink, certified trainer of hypnosis and neurolinguistic programming, and we will have her on, as I indicated, very soon. So tonight, I am thrilled because I am going to be interviewing Stacy Sprout. And Stacy wrote a memoir, and it now is available as an ebook. And she's put her heart and soul into this book. And I got to tell you, it is incredibly honest. It's an intense personal account of her journey from that painful world of sexual intrigue and addiction into that life of healing and purpose. And you know, that's what we do. We help people. She's a certified sexual addictions counselor. We help people to get healthy. And I've always said it really helps if you've had this problem. Because if you have the problem, then you really get, from the get-go, exactly the struggle another addict or the partner is going through. So we're going to be excited to have her on the show in just a few minutes. I love when people write their autobiographies and their memoirs. It really makes a difference in the account of sexual addiction. You know, I remember sitting in line, well, I was standing in line, actually, and I was with Patrick Carnes, and we were in line at the cafeteria, and I said, Patrick, I got two questions for you. One, does it matter that I'm not a male? And he said, what? And I said, well, do you think sex addicts and or their partners would rather talk with a male about their problems? And to all the male therapists that may be listening, This is not meant to be offensive to you, but he said, absolutely not, Carol. As a matter of fact, I suspect that it might be easier for a male or a female to talk to a woman. Well, let's face it. If you're an empathetic male, if you're easy to talk to, if you know your stuff, that's what counts. It made me feel better. And then the second question I asked him, Dr. Carnes, do you think it matters that I've not been in recovery? See, I don't suffer from a sexual addiction. So I have been training with many people who did, and that's why they went into this field. It is so typical that they have said to themselves, okay, you know, what we know to be true is once we get it, it's time to give back. And so he looked at me again and was kind of dumbfounded and said, why, no, Carol, I do not think that you have to be recovering to do a good job. So that made me feel, again, very good, because clearly what I know to be true is that it is so important for me to do the best job possible, and that's what counts. Now tonight, you know, I feel so invigorated. I'm getting ready to do a TED Talk here in Indianapolis. It's called Sparks, and I'm going to be talking about the gifts of sexual addiction. As you know, there are many. When somebody is in recovery, they are the new and improved, and they are so much more in tune with what their partners, their family, their coworkers need. And so I truly do believe it's a gift. I would not have it any other way. And so I'm just jazzed for that. It's a 10-minute talk. I mean, they actually put you on a clock, and they truly put you on a clock, and they go down to 10 minutes. And when it goes 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you have to be done. That's probably the only pressure that I face. Cannot wait for that experience. Now, I'm going to ask you something. It's something that I asked my group tonight, because it's important for you to be thinking about, if you are an addict or if you're a partner and you are in significant pain, I want to ask you, how can this benefit you? How can you grow stronger from it? What does it have to teach you? And interestingly enough, I mean, there's no doubt that I hear, wow, it has made me a better partner, because I listen to what my partner has to say. I want him or her to know that they are first and foremost on my list. And, you know, I can't help but believe that is so important to anybody in a partnership, that they be heard and that they be understood. And so a lot of times with sex addicts, I teach them the skill of reflective listening. Now, you probably have seen this done, whether you've gone to treatment or you've been in counseling. But it's when you, without editing, without editorializing, without putting your own two cents into it, you reflect back exactly what you hear from your partner. It makes you a better listener, and it absolutely helps them to understand what needs to happen for good communication. And what I mean by this is, clearly, you know, it is so common for us in communicating with our spouses to want to defend ourselves before our partner has even finished discussing his or her issue. And so reflective listening means that for a period of 1, 2, or 3 minutes, you spend major time listening specifically to what it is that they have said, and then you repeat verbatim. And when you repeat verbatim, you're actually thinking about what did they say as opposed to what do I want to say. So, one, they feel understood and validated, and two, they get that you really heard them. And that is incredibly important. I highly recommend that you do this. It makes all the difference in the world. So here's how it goes. Your partner's talking about something. Maybe it's that you didn't pick up the kids. Maybe it's about the pain he or she feels regarding your sex addiction. Maybe it's the fact that you've got to stop bringing up stressful situations right before you go to bed. And so you would then listen intensely to exactly what your partner has said, and then you'd say something like, honey, I heard you say that it makes you really frustrated when I bring up topics that are so difficult to hear late at night. And what I want you to know is not only did I hear it, but I want you to know that I am absolutely willing to change that behavior. You know, John Gottman said that it's not what you fight about counts. It's actually how you repair it counts most of all. Now, if you think about that for a minute, do you feel like you can do that? Do you feel like you can listen non-defensively to your partner, and then are you able to repeat back what they said and problem solve? I mean, is that a possibility? Can you do that? Because when you can figure out a way to solve the problem, that's called a repair attempt. And when that occurs, oh gosh, then I got to tell you, when it occurs, that it really means you've heard them and you've rectified the situation. Now, I always tell couples it is so important to be to do negotiation and compromise. However, I laughingly say, you know, when you negotiate and compromise, that means that you both feel like you got screwed as opposed to just one person. And why do I say that? Because I am here to tell you that oftentimes when we don't get our exact way, it can feel like we're not heard or understood. But in actuality, when somebody is willing to do the right thing and to hear what we have to say and to compromise, and clearly, that means they are partnering up with us to make that a better situation. And that's what life's all about. It's not getting our way in totality. It is, in actuality, working on something that works for both of us. And so that's why I say that compromise and negotiation may not be the perfect choice, but it is clearly the choice that can make relationship work. And that truly is a gift. We love that when that happens. Now, is that something that you can do as my listening audience? Are you able to compromise and negotiate? That's the question I'm going to ask you for the week. Can you compromise and negotiate so that you give a little to get a little? Because when you do, that's when you really make a partnership work. Okay, again, we are going to be talking with Stacy Sprout, and she has written an amazing ebook memoir. And that book is called Naked in Public, a memoir of recovery from sex addiction and other temporary insanities. It is the print book is due out December of 2015. The ebook is available right now on Amazon, iBooks, or Nook Books. Stacy is a licensed psychotherapist, author, and publisher with over 20 years of experience as a therapist and social worker in a variety of settings. She is a CSAT. You know that that means she's a certified sexual addictions therapist. And since 2006, for about the last 8 years, she has dedicated her practice to helping individuals, groups, and couples in recovery from sex and relationship addictions. And so when I heard that her book was coming out, I said, oh, I got to get you on the show. We got to talk about this because you are an inspiration to the many sex addicts and partners that have gone through this issue. So, Stacy, welcome to the show.
Carol, thanks for having me.
Well, absolutely. I so admire anybody who can write a book, and certainly this is a very courageous memoir about your life, what you went through, your struggles, and what you learned from recovery. So tell me a little bit about what made you write it.
Well, I certainly never imagined myself being this candid in my publicly. Certainly there's lots of open sharing in 12-step recovery meetings, but to do so outside the rooms, it came about in, I would say, three significant events happened. The first was in 2001 when my life was in complete free fall and I was bottoming out in my sex addiction. And I heard a man share at a meeting, and you know, we don't share what people say outside meetings, but this was one phrase, and it absolutely changed my life. And it was the phrase, my life is an open book. And it was a spiritual mantra that he'd been given by a teacher he had. And in that moment, I had my own spiritual experience of profound recognition. And I wrote about this in the introduction to Naked in Public. I just heard it as an unmistakable call to start living with integrity, because sex addiction is living not in integrity. And this call also came with a literal resonance. I felt like he was speaking my future. And I didn't start writing, but I got a second nudge 5 years later. I mean, the first many years of recovery for most people, at least for me, it was just about survival. But 5 years later, my life was much more stable. I was working as a therapist again. I was in my first day of training to become a CSAT, a Certified Sex Addiction Therapist, and I was being trained by Patrick Carnes, whom you know because you had him on your show recently. And he was offering, I asked him for some advice because I didn't know what to do. I had a lot of clients I was seeing in my CSAT practice who didn't feel comfortable going to 12-step meetings. And I asked them, what should I do about encouraging clients to go to 12-step, which I think is so essential for recovery for most of the people that I see. And his words were very direct, and they made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. And he basically said, if you want to help your clients, share your own story and let them make up their own minds. And so that felt like another voice in the calling, and I started writing not very long after that, but I didn't get very far. And the reason is because a lot of painful memories came up. You write a memoir, you have to remember. And so I quit. And then the third thing that happened that was my real catalyst had to do with about 6 years after that, I met the man who is now my husband, and about 6 months after we started dating, I just got this intuitive sense it was time to get back to the memoir. And it was interesting because, in a way, at that point, my life was going so well that most of the people outside my recovery circles would not have known about my past. But I knew about it. I knew that my sex addiction had almost killed me, the experiences of withdrawal. And so at that point, I just thought, you know, I was spared for a reason. I got through it. I had support. And so I wanted to offer something to other people who might be facing those same kinds of desperate moments and say, hey, if I got out of this, you can too, and especially for women. So that, you know, as far as sharing openly, I just wanted to capture the spirit of what I was helped by in 12-step meetings by writing directly about experiences that people don't often feel safe enough to talk about.
Well, and in so many ways, like you said, Patrick Carnes actually was saying that that's what you needed to do, not only for your own recovery, but to really help others. Because when we share a recovery with others, what happens? I mean, very clearly, they get better, we get better. So you said it was very painful initially to do that, correct?
Yes.
Okay, well, tell me a little bit about that. What do you think the pain was about?
Well, you know, one of the ways of dealing with trauma is to put it in a capsule or a bubble and store it, and then to move on. And that's, to me, I think of that as a dissociative reaction to trauma. I can't process it. I can't metabolize it. I just put it away. And so I had done that with various things that I moved on from. And in recovery, a lot of times if there's traumas that are being reenacted through the addictive behavior, it does make sense to put those on the deep freeze. You don't want to keep in euphoric recall and reviewing and reliving, and you really do want to put that on hold and grow stronger. And that's why it took me so long to really get serious about writing. I had so much support when I was in the thick of the writing. I had something almost every single day, support group or meeting or therapy, or it really took a lot of intensive support. So those bubbles started to pop. You know, I was writing about them. And in order to write about something, you've got to be able to go there. And so a lot of grief came up in the process of writing. But also, as you say, a lot of freedom, too. In retelling the story, it changes it in a positive way.
So you know, oftentimes we talk about sexual addiction occurs either because something gets fixated in the mind and it becomes compulsive, it creates a lot of curiosity that feeds on itself, and before somebody knows it, they have a full-fledged addiction that comes out of compulsivity. The second thing that we typically see is sexual trauma reenactment. And you were honest enough to talk about your own sexual abuse. Can you talk about a little bit of how you feel like that contributed to your sexual addiction?
Sure. You know, for me, the concept of repetition compulsion has been a very powerful key and a lock to help me understand why I would do certain things over and over and over. I mean, a person hears about sex addiction and they don't necessarily know how much diversity that can mean for different people. So what one person does in their addiction is different than what everybody else does, even if it looks the same on the outside, the certain specifics and rituals. So for me, the abuse that I went through gave me some grooves in my brain. It impacted my sexual template, and I was forced to reckon with that experience. And, you know, I say abuse like it's just one thing. There were layers of things that I experienced that were harmful to my innocence and my sexuality, and so there were layers of ways that I acted out that harm. Now, I do believe in the concept of susceptibility, and that's something that I learned from Dr. Gabor Mate, who does wonderful work in the Vancouver area with addicts, not necessarily sex addicts, but lots of drug addicts, homeless folks. And he talks about the issue of susceptibility, that some people are sensitive sexually or sensitive in different areas. They just have sensitivities that might make them more susceptible to addictions. And I'm fascinated by that. But for me, there was also a really clear correlation between the covert sexual interest that I received from family members in my own family, the overt sexual abuse that I experienced also from family member, and the ways that I would then want to kind of take control of those kinds of experiences, not be in a vulnerable position, and reenact them. I call it behavioral storytelling, and it took me a long time to put together those connections, unfortunately, a lot of damage was done to me, and other people were hurt too in my sex addiction. So that's something that I really have to come to terms with, both in order to achieve sobriety, but also I write about it quite a bit in the book, of the process of amends is a core part of recovery, of lasting recovery, I believe.
Okay, and you know, I'm a big believer in, obviously, whatever doesn't kill you, whatever doesn't destroy you, makes you stronger. And truly, you took this abuse as a child, and you acted it out sexually. Like you said, it helped to develop your arousal template and contributed to behaviors that were sexually addicted in nature. And then you grew from them, and you actually, you profited from those experiences in that you made something valuable come out of that. How long did that take you in your own development? You were abused at about what age?
Well, the earliest memory that I have is from approximately age 3, but there's so little chronology in the brain at that time, I'm not totally sure. But it's around that time, and then things kind of stacked up from there. So in terms of the answer to your question of, you know, how long did that take, I mean, I'm 45 years old, and I would say that it came in layers. I was in therapy, as I write about in the book, before I got into 12-step sexual recovery, and I definitely learned things there that helped me. I learned strategies of dealing with certain things, but when healing is needed at such deep levels, it just comes in layers. There's only so much to be done at any one time. And it's taken my lifetime at different levels to try to find relief. And it's been a beautiful journey, I will say. I mean, thank you for the affirmation that there is a certain strength. We talked about, when you and I talked on your show before, about post-traumatic transformation, and I see the resilience. It is amazing. I mean, really, humans are designed to be so incredibly strong. And so they get through things that I think, how did they get through that? And, you know, me too. Abuse is a horrific thing that happens to children, and neglect. And yet we have people around us thriving every day. And part of that is because of addictions. They're numbing out. And so that's a form of protection. Until they can get
absolutely
into
recovery. 100% agree with you. And so then that aha moment that you had that pushed you forward into recovery and a better life, tell us about that.
Well, you know, I guess for me, I was mostly motivated in terms of getting serious in recovery by survival and desperation. I mean, I do. It is true that I had these spiritual experiences that called me to writing the book. But in terms of getting into the room, like becoming willing to say, I need to go to a room full of sex addicts and talk and listen, I mean, that is a pretty extreme thing for many people to do. It was for me. But I was desperate. I was lost, and I felt utterly exhausted. And I was in a relationship which was horrible. But I felt like I loved this guy, and I wanted to do something to try to make it work. And I'd had a very painful experience with an unethical therapist, so I didn't want to go back to therapy. And somebody suggested I read a book on codependency, and I did. And all of a sudden, I saw that I had a problem. And so that got me into my first 12-step program. And then from there, and I write about this in the book, it was suggested to me that I look at my sexuality from an addiction point of view. And I didn't want to, but I really didn't feel like I had any other place to go. And so that, and I'm grateful. I am very grateful because that gave me the willingness to go into the rooms and listen. And, you know, I didn't listen very well at first, but I kept going back because I kept hearing something that I'd never heard in my life up to that point. And that was this tremendous candor, tremendous truthfulness, which is so ironic that you have to go to a room full of sex addicts to hear the deepest truth you've ever heard, or at least that was my experience. But that was it. That was a fact. It was amazing. And I think for people to heal from sexual addiction and some of the depravity that we do in addiction, there has to be an even stronger force of truth that comes through for that healing to take place. And it's in the rooms. I mean, you know, anybody I would recommend who's curious about sex addiction, find an open meeting and go and listen, because what is in there is very powerful and very healing.
For some of our listeners who may not know what an open meeting is, obviously there are meetings that are closed. They are solely for sex addicts, people that already know I've got that problem. And then an open meeting is for somebody who may have some questions about it, or it's for partners who want to understand it better, or even for interns, students, people that just on some other level want to hear what is going on for the addict. And so you chose an open meeting because?
Well, my first meeting was a closed meeting. I was going for my own, I was going on my own volition, although I was really torn. I mean, I wanted to be there and I didn't want to be there. I was really conflicted. But eventually I went to closed meetings and open meetings. It was more like wherever I could go to get help, I would go. But yes, what you said about open meetings, that fits with my experience. People who are curious about learning about healing from sexual recovery can go. And I've been in meetings where we've had interns come, and where there have been, you know, nurses or helping professionals or family members. And my guess is, you know, the people listening to your show are in recovery, or they're curious about recovery, so they're great candidates to go and just hear for themselves.
Absolutely. And so that was the impetus. That was the little bit of a push that then had you look at your own behaviors and your own life in a different way, and that had to feel very comforting to have that aha moment.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was a certain sense of belonging, which was very weird to find in a room full of sex addicts, but there was a certain sense of tribe. It was like, okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. There's something here for
me. And that's the beautiful thing. People go, I don't want to go to meetings and expose myself, but truly, when you go, you do find that there's more similarities and differences, no matter who's there and what the issues are. So let me ask you now, what was it like the very first time you went into a sexual addiction recovery meeting and found out that you were the only woman, which can make it more difficult?
Well, that's a great question, because it happens a lot for women, being the only one there. I mean, it depends. There's, you know, there's at least 5 different 12-step fellowships for sexual addiction. There's probably more. I know there's more. And so finding a fellowship, a lot of people find it online. They just look up, you know, 12-step sex addiction recovery, whatever. And then so of the different fellowships, some have more women than others, and it's regional, and so you never know. But for me, when I walked into the room, I was terrified, and as I mentioned earlier, I dissociated. In other words, I went into a threat response of freeze, like a deer in the headlights, and I just sat down, and I went into my old coping mechanism, which is act like everything's fine, act like I know what I'm doing, act like I'm perfect. And so they were passing around this book that people were reading. It's a recovery book. And so I just took the book, and I started reading and trying to read, you know, well, and I wasn't connecting with what was being shared or what I was reading because it was overwhelming. I couldn't take it in. So that was my experience. So not really the poster child for having a great first meeting experience, but that was just a fact for me. And, you know, fortunately, the people who I met there were very welcoming, very kind. You know, there was a certain attitude of almost like, we've been waiting for you. Like, you know, they had a special pamphlet that they handed me to welcome. It was really, so, but for me, it wasn't the meeting itself that I was reacting to, I think. I mean, in some ways, sure, it's intimidating to walk into a room of a different gender than you, and you're the only one there, and they're talking about sex. And so that was a part of my experience. But it was also what being there started bringing up from inside of me. That's what I was really you know, I had dissociated or frozen that stuff my whole life. And so going into the meeting and having that stuff suddenly start to thaw out and become more real, you know, you start to realize things that, or for me, that I had suppressed my whole life and that generationally my family had suppressed. I mean, this is like in the DNA. You do not talk about this stuff. So it was a lot. It was pretty overwhelming, but it planted an amazing seed. And that seed was, there is a place where you can talk about this kind of stuff, where people are trying to support one another, and then there's a place to get better. So I do write about that, you know, in my book, trying to share the story, because I think, you know, some people learn through other stories, and there's things that women can do that make their experience better than the way that it worked for me. So I have an appendix in the book, you know, which is our Women Safe in 12-Step Recovery Meetings, Sexual Recovery Meetings, and I talk about some ideas, things they can do to make themselves have a better experience of calling ahead of time and maybe going, bringing a friend to an open meeting. There's telephone meetings, so dipping your toe in the water a little bit before you walk in. There are women's only meetings and more of those all the time. So there are different ways to find recovery, and I'm grateful for all the different ways that people can find.
Yeah, because, you know, obviously as you read the book, it was very valuable for you to find other women in sexual recovery. You know, as a therapist and also as a recovering sex addict, do you see any differences between male and female sex addicts in both their active addiction and also in their recovery?
Yes, I do. And yet there's no hard and fast rules. What I would say, yes, it's absolutely important to find people of your same gender if that's who you connect with. For me, it was vital that I found other women in sexual recovery because, you know, they would tell my story and they would say things I felt too ashamed to say. And I knew that if I thought they were a good person, that I could be a good person too. So, you know, in my practice as a therapist working with recovering sex addicts, male and female, I see some things that do go along with the research that Dr. Carnes has done that he wrote about in Don't Call It Love, where he divided sex addiction into 10 types. And I do see that, well, both genders struggle with fantasy in different ways, but women can struggle more with seductive role sex, trading sex, and exhibitionism, which often women are socialized to be sexual in that way, whereas... But, you know, it really depends on the woman and the man. Many male sex addict clients talk about more difficulty with anonymous sex, paying for sex than the women clients do, voyeuristic sex, and sometimes intrusive sex, but women struggle with that too. You know, there's a classic kind of wisdom that women can struggle with relational love addiction issues more than men, but with more... availability of pornography and the cheating apps like Ashley Madison, making it so easy for women to have anonymous sex, in fact, very rewarded for women, tension in that way. I think it's increasing that more women are struggling with what we might have once called more the sex addiction than the relationship addiction, where they're having multiple partners at the same time in public relationships, but... So everyone needs to be assessed individually, I would say. And, you know, the one thing, too, the difference I see for female sex addicts is poverty. I don't see that as commonly in the male population, where women may be supporting themselves through trading sex for money. And so for them, getting sober means completely leaving their trade, completely leaving their support network. Completely leaving if they have someone who's pimping them out. They may face violence if they leave, if they have children. So it becomes a much more systemic issue if your finances and your sex addiction are intertwined. So I see that more with women than I've seen with men.
Okay, so let's go over that one more time. You said women may be more prone to a sex addiction that has to do with paying for sex.
Women trading sex for money. In other words, receiving money for sex, prostitution.
Absolutely.
Exhibitionism. In other words, displaying their body in an objectified way for the purpose of attracting sexual attention indiscriminately.
Okay, and that might be a job where someone actually is a dancer.
Exactly. So then you get into, again, if there's money, then it's the trading sex category with exhibitionism. So overlap there. Seductive role sex. And we can trace these
back.
Would
that be seductive role sex?
Pardon?
I said, what would that be for our listening audience? They may not know what seductive role sex is.
Oh, okay. Well, seductive role sex, I think of that as stepping into a way of relating where sexual flirtation or intrigue is a big part of what the woman is doing with the intention of controlling the sexual encounter. And I'm not saying that men don't do this also, but women are socialized. You just look at any, women's magazine for are women socialized to be in a seductive role when they relate to men or other women if they're gay. That's a huge pressure from women from the time they're little girls, that they ought to be beautiful. And the seductive role is part of that image that they see, more and more revealing, kind of physically, sexually revealing clothes and poses and dancing. And, you just look at the transition for celebrities, particularly if they're child stars, and what happens to their image as they age, if they're moving into a very seductive role. So women are socialized to do that with more obvious external signs with their clothes and their dress and their posture and how they may talk than men sometimes are.
Absolutely. So thank you for clarifying that, because I always tell my listeners there's 10 types of sexual addiction, and you just spoke about three of them. And it was interesting to hear that obviously they are not solely women, but they are predominantly women's sexual addiction. It's the culture that has kind of created that. And I clearly heard you say part of it is the economics for women. And I certainly have had many a client, even prior to my sexual addiction background, that made so much money as a dancer and traded money for sex and bartered and exploited themselves, that what ended up happening was they really felt trapped. They knew they would only make a fraction in the real world, and it was very, very difficult for them to get out.
Yeah.
Now, of Naked in Public, which, of course, is your e-book that is already out. You said it's going to be in print copy in December of 2015. What would you like them to take away from your book?
Well, what I would love is for people to tell me that they couldn't put it down. I mean, I'd love for them to be engrossed by the story. I worked really hard to make it interesting and hopefully fast-paced. But more than that, I would love for them to take away that help is available, that people can and do heal from sex addiction, that miracles happen. And though it's often the daily effort imperfectly that brings long-term success. So there's a saying in 12-step, don't quit before the miracle. And it's one day at a time, too. So I would love to hear that people feel encouraged. And I have heard that. I've been getting tremendous feedback. The response, it's only been out for 2.5 weeks, but the response has been phenomenal. I've heard from the U.S. and the U.K. and Canada and France getting emails where those books have sold. And one of the first things I heard was from a gay man who was really touched by what I wrote about with my relationship with my sponsor, who is also a gay man. And you know, the gay men have been tremendous in my own recovery, and they struggle with, in certain ways, they have, there's a some of their struggles, the pressure of objectification, and there's certain things they have in common more with women than straight men, and some of the pressures on their sexuality. But in terms of the readers, yeah, I'd love for them to know or take away from the book that no matter how unworthy they might feel or how horrible the things they have done, they can get better. Individuals can get better. Marriages can heal or happen. People thought, oh, I'd never get married. I'm too, you know, I struggle with so much shame about that. But people heal and families mend. And that's a lot of what I write about in the book, too, is just the healing of my whole family.
Well, I know you mentioned that. So obviously you're married, and your husband, how does he feel about you being so honest about your recovery?
Well, my husband is in sexual recovery himself, so he is a tremendous advocate for recovery in general. He works in the field, and he is someone who has never wavered in his support of this story getting out there. You know, there's times that we had to struggle with what was going to be in there and what wasn't. It was a lot that I asked of him to walk with me through this process, and we worked through it, and we're both really happy with how the book came out. We're just delighted, and he's been my number one supporter, and I could not have done it without him, so I am so grateful for, and, you know, he's a published author, so he's already written two books. He wrote a book called Men's Secret Wars, and a book called The Boundaries Book. So it helped that he'd already published in the field, so he had experience, and it wasn't such a foreign concept for him to be talking publicly about sex addiction.
Well, absolutely, and I bet that Boundaries book is absolutely fantastic. I didn't know that. I'm going to have to get that.
Oh, yeah,
I'm
check it out.
I'm always advocating boundaries, no matter who I'm working with or what I'm working on. We all need that.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's actually called The Boundaries Book?
Yeah, The Boundaries Book.
And is it written just by him?
Yep, he wrote it.
Okay, very good. Well, you know, there's the other Boundaries Book, and that has been in the field for, what, 15, 20 years? So I really admire anybody who can put that together. And you have done such a fabulous job. Now, how can people get your book?
Well, right now it's available for sale on Amazon and iBooks and Nook Books. And as I said, we're working on the print book copy right now. We're gearing for a December release. So it's available in ebook and will be available in print book as soon as we can get it out.
All right, and last but not least, you know, obviously you talked about Dr. Carnes, and it was very interesting on my that he really felt like there were two things that were absolutely imperative to good, solid recovery, and he said the first is spiritual transformation, and he said, yes, you can achieve it in other ways. He really advocated the 12-step program, and certainly throughout your book, so did you. You could see that you were in fellowship, sistership, and kinship with 12-step recovery. I mean, it really was the catalyst that kept you going when you doubted yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
And then the second thing he said was, he said, you know, until you give back and practice that 12th step, recovery isn't truly solidified because it's got to come full circle. And that's certainly what he encouraged you to do because obviously your recovery was solid and he wanted you next to take it to the next level. So what did he think of your book?
Well, the Patrick Carnes has a press, Gentle Path Press, and they've been super supportive. So they're going to be selling my book as soon at the SASHC, or no, the ITAP conference in February. So that's been part of the motivation to get the print book ready by then. And so, yeah, they've been great supporters, and it's been really fun.
Okay, so that book specifically has been published, or is in the process of being published by Gentle Path, which is Patrick Carnes' publishing company.
That's confusing. The book is published by a company that I own called Recontext Media, but Gentle Path Press has agreed to sell it through their bookstore. They have a big recovery bookstore at their conference, and so that was one of the just kind of delightful things that I found out, is they were willing to sell the book, and so I'm looking forward to that.
Well, absolutely. So as we end for today, is there anything else that you want to share in terms of your own hope, strength, and recovery in motivating, you know, our listeners who are addicts and who are partners of sex addiction?
Well, there's two things I want to say. One is hang in there. Just hang in there. I really believe that something can change. And the second is a thank you to you, Carol, for this show and the people that you interview. This opportunity to talk with you is so precious because we live in a culture of media soundbites, and your in-depth questions and your knowledge about this topic gives me a chance to expand on ideas, and I don't have to just try to say it in a line or two. So I really thank you for the depth work you do to address these issues. And thanks for the opportunity to promote my book. I'd love for anybody who needs it and wants to have it, that they have access to it. So may it be of benefit.
Well, absolutely. Tell us, if they go to Amazon or iNook or iBook, how much is the book via ebook?
Oh, it's $9.99.
Isn't that the truth? I wrote a group book. It was actually on sexual recovery for group. And I heard that was the number one price. The people felt like they were getting a deal, and obviously it got the word out. So I so appreciate you doing that through ebook, because not everybody does that. And so thank you so much for doing it. I can't wait to see it in print. You're going to be at the symposium in February?
I hope so. It's on my visions list. We'll see what comes together. I'm putting the book first, but I hope to. Are you going to be there?
I'm going to be there, and actually I'm going to be presenting on something near and dear to your heart. It's post-traumatic growth, which
Yes.
is very much what you were teaching the last time you were on the show. And what I believe to be true is that this symposium, whether it be this year or next, needs you to come in and talk about why it's important to get the word out, because obviously this is a transformation for you, and you listen well to the masters, and I know that Patrick Carnes really encouraged that, and you had it in your soul, and he encouraged you to do it, and it's an amazing book. So I look forward to seeing you, whether it be this year or next, and I would encourage everybody to get the book. I think you'll find it very, very inspiring, especially for my female sex addicts, because clearly there are some differences, and we know that in lots of different ways. For partners of female sex addicts, I think it can be very, very inspirational, because you'll see that an addict does figure out how much they're hurting their family and their partners in the process. In some ways, I don't know if you buy this, Stacey, but when I work with female sex addicts and their partners, partners seem even double traumatized, more so than the females, in that this was never supposed to happen to them. You know, females kind of get it when they're the partners, but males, it's just a double whammy, and it affects every part of their soul. So I really think they would benefit from reading your book.
I want to validate that. Yeah, I appreciate your witnessing that level of pain. There's something extraordinary about that experience that men go through. Yeah.
Absolutely. So once again, I am talking with Stacy Sprout, and she wrote an amazing book, and it's in e-book form right now, and it is called Naked in Public, and then it's, fill me in on the second part, it's a memoir of sexual addiction and other insanities. I've got that wrong, but I'm close.
Oh, it's okay. It's kind of a long subtitle, a memoir of recovery from sex addiction and other temporary insanities. And I'm emphasizing the recovery portion. So while I do talk about some of the experiences in my sexual addiction, the true emphasis of the book is on the recovery aspect of that experience.
You got it. Well, good luck to you. Keep me posted on the other books you've got in your soul. We'll take care of that too, and have a great week, and thanks again for sharing your hope, strength, and recovery.
You are welcome, and thank you so much for having me. You have a great week too, Carol.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. So as you can see, this is a woman who really has a passion, and that passion is to share and witness her own recovery, because sometimes it can feel like it's never really going to happen, and it is so very important for people to recognize that not only can they recover from this debilitating illness, but that they can grow stronger and give back. And you heard me say it, Patrick Kern said, that's what it's all about, giving back, and that is so very important. So how could you give back? Maybe it's that you can call somebody back who's been struggling in your fellowship, or maybe it means you just volunteer and do something special. I know that one of my recovering addicts, he volunteers at an addiction hospital, and absolutely, he is thankful for everything he gets. When he's talking to the families, he's able to share. I know. I've been there. He also is a recovering drug and alcohol addict, so he's been plagued with all three of those addictions. And, you know, it's a way to make sense of the pain that you go through. As you've heard me say it, it's the addict that carries the shame, and it's the partner who carries so much of the pain, and it's imperative that we all work together so that we make some real growth out of this. Post-traumatic growth is what it's all about. So I will see you next week for another great show. I am so pleased that you stick with me and really hang in there. You've downloaded. We are up to 300,000 listeners across the world. If you have any questions for me, you know I am more than happy to work with you. So give me a call at 317-847-2244 or email me at caroldecoach@aol.com. I'll be happy to Skype or consult with you in any way possible to get you on the right track so that you live your best life. And as we say at the end of every show, you know, there will only be one of you at all times. So fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. We'll catch you next week for more sex help with Carol the Coach. Have a good one.